Hi, everyone. Russ Thomas here from RST Coaching Academy. Welcome to a new episode of Money Talks, where we talk about money and how to make more of it. Hey, good morning, everybody out there in internet land. This is Russ here again with RST Coaching Academy, another awesome episode of Money Talks. Today, I get to talk all the way. I'm in Daytona Beach, of course, but I get to talk today all the way to someone in Phoenix, Arizona, about 3 hours behind me, time-wise. She's probably just getting out of bed. I've been up for a while. Anyway, this is Tara Brown from Phoenix, and find out she is an architect, but I think she's got something that's really hot in her heart that she wants to maybe talk about even more than being an architect. But anyway, I'm going to turn her loose on you folks and listen attentively to her story, where she came from and how she got to where she's at and what she's fired up about now in life, and some advice for you later on. All right. So Tara, welcome aboard. Thanks for coming on. It's going to be a good time.
And thanks, Russ.
Turn you loose right now. Go for it.
Okay. Well, it's a pleasure to meet you. And thanks to your audience for just being here and for listening. You guys are really lucky to be able to listen to Russ and all the people that he brings on his podcast. So
you're making me blush. Come on.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know a little bit about you. There are a couple of things about you that you, it's important to you that people recognize that their thoughts are, have a creative power and that givers gain, right? There's a two foundational things you and I have very much in common. I'm an architect by license, by training, by profession. I still work in architecture. My work turned into becoming healthcare architecture, where I help hospitals build. So I've done projects as little as messy as like a tiny little room that was an oxygen manifold where we installed just simple for medical gases, to brand new hospitals or expansions of major clients, patient wings and major additions. It's very rewarding work. And it feeds a lot of my desire, but there's something else that I do that feeds my soul. So I also coach people in personal development. And where the two intersect is that thoughts become things idea. In architecture, architects are hired by clients to take ideas, to translate them into a visual language that gets handed off to a master builder, a general contractor for construction. Everything is created the same way. So those of you that are building businesses, you're taking an idea, you're translating it into actually also a visual language, a series of images and pictures and words in your mind first, that then gets handed off to a master builder, in this case, the universe, energy, whatever it is that actually creates this world to be constructed. And so I first became aware of this on one of the very first jobs that I did. So I'm one of those highly educated people, undergraduate degree from MIT, master's degree at Yale, thought I wanted to be a professor, grew up on the wrong side of the tracks and the wrong side of Los Angeles, and then would go to college back east. Early in my career, I was working on a design for a room at the Charlotte Douglas International Airport. I actually saw it last fall. It's still there. It was a meeting room. And I spent a lot of time designing it. It was my first job out of college. I really paid attention to how it was a meeting room that was for a group of about 100 people, and it was auditorium style seating. And I paid attention to the form of the room. I applied what I learned from acoustics and hard surfaces, soft surfaces, reflective sound, and did a lot of very careful study of how the walls and the paneling would come together. And then when the drawings were done, I moved to Phoenix. I would follow my then boyfriend, who would later become my husband. And I moved to Phoenix. And about a year after moving to Phoenix, I had a privilege of going back to Charlotte, and I got to see this room had it been built once it was constructed. Most architects are able to kind of track a job through construction, and so you watch it. But in this case, I walked into the room and I had an entire deja vu experience as if I'd already been there. So I'm 27 years old at the time, and it landed that, oh, what I did as an architect was I occupied the future. I really had in my imagination, in my being, I'd already been in that room. And when I physically walked into it, it was like I'd already been there because in my imagination, I'd imagined it so fully that I had. So why does this matter to you, right? Why, well, okay, Tara, I'm not an architect, probably. Very few people on this audience are probably architects. We're just not a huge profession. Why would this matter to you? Because what I realized was that as an architect, I inhabit the future and the world catches up to me. This goes back to what this whole concept of thoughts become things. When you so thoroughly occupy the future that you can feel it, see it, smell it, taste it, embody it, the world catches up to you. And this is what I do in my personal development work with people. Now, why this matters and why this is so important is this. You're doing it anyway. You actually don't get a choice. Every result that you're having, and I had an argument on Facebook recently with someone who said, "Do people manifest everything that shows up in their life?" And I'm like, "You manifest your response to everything that shows up in your life. That response triggers the next step." So, do you actually control that the guy is like speeding down the highway in front of you? No, but you get to control your response to it. You get, and so every result that you're having right now is a perfect reflection of where you were in the past. This is not a blame statement. This is actually, you are that powerful. And almost no one's going to tell you that. You are so powerful that your thoughts are generative. Just like me imagining that space such that it could get built the very close to the way I designed it, and I had never been in that deja vu experience, your life is unfolding the same way. But Tara, I'm not an architect. Like, that's what your job is. Yes, true. I
Well, we're
was,
an architect of our lives, aren't
yes,
we?
you are. I couldn't
Yeah,
agree with you
architect of our
more.
thoughts. And then
Yep.
becoming, what did you say? The image, the thoughts, and then the image, and then the words, and then the follow through to fruition. So yeah, we are architects in a sense, for sure.
In that sense, I couldn't agree with you more. Absolutely. You of your own life, you are absolutely the architect of that. And so that's what lights me up, is really helping people like you understand that your thoughts are generative and that you can influence your future. You can really create your future by what you start doing with your thinking today. And so this leads into the tool that I was talking, sharing with you about, the one that I've developed, which is kind of a coalescing of this. How can you make, so this is a great idea. It's great in theory. And when I work with clients, I work with them for several months or in a year-long program where I really train them deeply in how to leverage this and how to use this. But how can you do this today? So I actually just did a talk in front of a group of executive women on Friday, and I shared this tool with them. And I call it micro visioning. So when I work with people, I help them create a 3-year vision of what they want their life to look like. The micro part compresses this down in time. So think about an important event that you have coming up. So this could be a meeting. A professional, it could be a sales conversation, it could be a new meeting with a new client, it could be a conversation with your boss, delivering good news, delivering bad news, but the outcome is important to you. That's what, to me, that defines a highly impactful event where you care how the conversation or the meeting goes. And it's important that it's a meeting, it's an interaction between you and at least one other person. That's where this tool really comes into play. So, micro visioning is the idea of creating a vision for the outcome that you would love for this short in time limited event. So, I'm going to use the word meeting because it's the easiest way to put it in a professional context and to talk about it. But I've done this with clients going into sales conversations. I've done this with colleagues having conversations with their boss. I've done this with my 17-year-old who was going off to meet a professor for the first time for an internship, right? So it works at all scales.
So you're kind of you're kind of envisioning the meeting, the conversation before it ever happens.
And
Yes.
one of the things you said here is a favorable outcome. Now,
Yes.
a lot of times people have a fear factor
Yes.
that can get in the way, and suddenly this microvisioning is turning out into a fearful situation. Obviously, as you know, most of the things that we ever fear don't even ever happen, but nevertheless, fear, false evidence appearing real, and so on. So how do you help a person get out of that mold, that frame of mind, and into the favorable outcome frame of mind?
Absolutely. That's a great question because that's what I find if is for a lot of us, if we're really a, if the meeting is that important, we might spend a lot of time being afraid of it not going well. And so we're energizing that with our thought. So the first question I ask people, and I did this with a friend of mine, Larry, for example, who needed to talk to his boss. He's a team lead. His project team made a mistake and it cost the owner money. And so he needed to go to the owner of the comp his company to write a check to pay the client back for the mistake that they made. And they'd been talking about it for months, but it hadn't gone anywhere. And it was at the point in time where, look, we just need to cut the check. We just need to fix this problem and we just need to move on.
Yeah.
And so Larry was going in to have this conversation and he was anticipating it not going well, to your point.
Yeah, bet.
And so the first question I ask is, what's the outcome you would love to have happen? Really, like, stop and think about. Push to the side all the things you're worried that might happen. And what's the actual outcome that you really want, that you would really love to have happen? Now, most people, especially if they're into business development and sales, they think they want to close the deal. But if this is a first or an early conversation, that's like hopping into bed on the first date. I don't know if that's actually what you really want, right? Do you really want that? Or do you really want, is this a transactional relationship where you just want one sale, move on, next thing? Or do you want to
Or
create a lasting relationship with a customer that could generate revenue for you and your business again and again and again?
right, a relationship, yeah, indeed.
You got to ask yourself that question. So the question of what would I love for the outcome of this is really important, and it's not always obvious. It's not always make the sale. So in Larry's case, he'd already had previous conversations with his boss. He wanted his boss to cut the check. There was a client of mine, her name is Barb, and she had a furniture company. When I first met her, she worked for somebody else and she had a pillow company. She didn't know she knew how to design furniture. And over the first course of the first year of working together, she discovered she could design furniture. And by the end of the year, they had a furniture manufacturing company. By year two, they had already done $1.5 million in sales in the second year alone of furniture manufacturing and design. So she's going into a new sales conversation with a prospective client and she was nervous. I'm like, the normal nerves that we all have when we're going into a conversation with again, highly important
Sure.
prospective client in this case. And so we started having this conversation, what would you love the outcome of this meeting to be? And she realized what she really wanted was a second meeting. That was the outcome that she wanted. This is why I'm saying you want to spend time thinking about this. Yeah, she wanted to make a sale. Yeah, she wanted a customer. But what she wanted out of this event was a follow-on meeting. So that's the first question. What do you want out of this event, this conversation, this meeting? And then part B of that is how would you feel when you have it? What is the feeling that you would experience when you're having that result? I'm going to come back to the feeling. Happy, thrilled, proud, successful, whatever it is, but the positive emotion that you would experience when you have accomplished your intended result. So for Larry, my boss agrees to write the check. For Barb, I've secured the second meeting. So that's the first part. The second part is also, listen to this, because most people, this is the pivot. This is a significant pivot. Most people have to think about this a few times before they get it. What is the benefit to the other person for spending the hour with you? It's not because they bought your product or your service. It's not because they did what you wanted them to do.
This is underscored by the idea that the rising tide raises all boats. And so you're in a meeting with someone. How do they benefit by giving you this hour? They are never going to get this hour back. They can make more money, they can make more widgets, they can make hire more people, but they're never going to get this hour of time in their life back, ever. So they're giving you the most important, the most precious thing that they can, their time. So what's their gain for giving you their time?
So it's
What's
not all about me.
mm-mm.
We got to be concerned for the other person as well. How
Absolutely.
they respond, how they react, how they benefit.
How they
Good.
benefit.
Great. Yep.
And we cannot control how they respond or react, but we can influence it. We do have influence. We do not have control. So when Larry was thinking about it, he was thinking, you know, my boss would the benefit to him was the solution, the problem would be solved. And then the part B of that is how would they feel? How would you want them to feel when they have the benefit? So what's the concrete benefit to them? And then how would they feel? And so in Larry's case, the problem would be resolved and he would feel relieved while still having confidence in the team, right? Larry, it's his boss. He wanted him to still have confidence in Larry's leadership in the team. In Barb's case, they would he would feel like his problems were being addressed. And some relief, like there'd be some relief. And so then the final part, the third part in this is to ask yourself, because you've already been rehearsing, if this is an important conversation, at some level, you've been rehearsing this conversation in your head or with your peers, whether you've been doing it from the fear side before you pivoted to what you would like the outcome to be.
Right.
But now the last part of this is to ask yourself, okay, knowing that this is the outcome that I want. And that's how I'd feel. And this is the benefit to the other person that I'd like for them to have and how I'd like them to feel. Is there any pivot you would make in your presentation? Is there any way you would change how you're approaching this conversation that you've been planning? So in Larry's case, for example, when I asked him that question, he very thoughtful, dear friend and colleague, and he literally went inside and thought, I'd be softer. I'd be softer in my approach. And that was it. And in Barb's case, when she did this, that was where she got the idea that, oh, I really want the second meeting. And so they pivoted and they didn't make a pitch at all. They made no pitch. All they did is they went in and they sat down with this buyer and they said, what are the problems that you're facing? What are the problems that you're facing in your furniture, in your delivery, in your experience? And then they asked, would it be okay if we come back with solutions? That was their hook, right? That's how they got to come back. They wanted the second meeting. And he explained all his problems. He said they could come back. And he was really taken aback because he was waiting for the pitch and they never pitched him. You're laughing, right? They stood out, right? This tool I'm talking about will set you apart from the competition. Because almost nobody is thinking about how they're the gift to the person they're talking to. They're all thinking about how I can get from this person, not what I can give to them. So the moment you pivot to what you can give and the benefit to them, you're going to stand out because it's so rare. I would like for it to be a lot less rare, which is why I'm teaching this, but it is still pretty rare. And so in Barb's case, they did go back. They did. Think about it. They did come up with solutions. They did fly back and present those solutions to him. Larry's boss wrote the check. I got a text message later that same day. Barb made a long-term relationship. They didn't just sell one or two pieces of furniture. They outfitted eight stories of his brand new office tower. That's the power in this methodology, is to really think about the outcome you actually want. How you'd feel. And then think about the benefit to the other person, how you'd want them to feel. And just checking in, is there anything I'd change about my approach, my meeting, my presentation, whatever I'm doing, the plan I have for this conversation to influence those results? And to a person that's applied it thoughtfully and with heart, they've gotten the results that they wanted. My 17-year-old literally curled up in a chair thinking, oh my God, this professor is going to think I'm stupid. I don't know why they want it. Total imposter syndrome. If any of you out there have had imposter syndrome, this helps with imposter syndrome. Who am I? I mean, I'm looking at her. She's totally curled up into a ball, literally her knees in her face. Super smart kid. I don't know why you'd want to talk to me. What am I doing? I'm crazy. I'm foolish. I'm stupid. I mean, totally beating herself up. And I was able to look at her, the mom, go, okay, thank goodness I have this background. Because I could say, instead of going, stop it, I'd say, is that really what you want to have happen? No. Okay. Well, and then we started talking about what do you want to have happen? I want to show up and I want to be smart and I want to show all I know and I want to communicate well and I want to be confident. I want to learn. And how would you feel? I would feel good. I'd feel capable. And what would you like the benefit to him? Oh, he'd realize he's getting a really talented high school student that's volunteering in his lab and that he'd get that advantage and that I know what I'm talking about. And how would he feel? He'd feel confident that he's making a good choice. We let it go. I didn't like entertain it any further with her. I drove her, dropped her off, picked her up, and she comes back and she's on fire. She's got this journal and she's got all these notes in there. Mom, I was talking about nanotubes. I don't know what nanotubes are, but she does. But he's talking about his research. It's in nanotubes and she knows what they are and she's able to draw them for him. And it unfolded the way she wanted, right? All these people were prepared. They weren't walking into this conversation with absolutely no background. But their success was built on how they were able to reframe their own thinking and then think of the benefit to the other person. So you can't fake this. Like you can't, you know, I as an architect, 7 years of education, you know, 3 years of internship, a week of exams, you know, there's a lot that goes into getting that license. I can't fake that. But I can show up as my best self or I can show up as my worst self in a conversation with a client, a customer, a colleague, a boss. A friend and have influence over how that impactful meeting
Right.
goes.
Before you get on your CAD system or your pen and paper or whatever it is, you're a person, you're a human being, and you project that to the client, to the prospective client. And so there's definitely the personal side of even being an architect. A lot of people that are in like a high tech industry, you know, you think of computer geeks, for example. Yeah, they really know, you know, the ones and the zeros of coding and all this stuff. But as far as interpersonal skills are concerned, they're really flops because they just don't have that. Can that be learned? Can that be trained and in you know, ultimately built into a person's psyche when it's not part of their personality, I guess I would say. You know, you've got the introvert. That's what a lot of these geeks are like. Okay. So is there a way that they can step out of that?
Absolutely. I'm an introvert.
Oh, well, I wondered because of your
I'm an
profession.
MIT nerd from the 1980s that
Yeah.
was a girl.
Okay. There
I
she is.
fit that description.
There you have it, folks. This is honesty all the way through, right? We're talking to a nerd. Okay. And so you. Was it a struggle for you
Early
to?
in my career. So I don't know if you've ever you worked with the tool of Clifton Strength Finders. We've been doing that a lot in our industry. So it's a it, Gallup and Clifton come together and they do a test and they tell you what your top five strengths are. And then they categorize them, whether it's like motivation or relationship or strategy, or I forget the other one. And mine is all strategy. Like my top five are what they want you to work from. Mine are all strategic, all internal, all reflective, all introvert, all day long, all the time. And so I am that person who early in my career, I didn't like people would talk about networking and I'd be going, I like,
Nope.
why would anyone? I can relate to my kid. Why would anyone want to talk to me? It's not because I wasn't smart or capable. It's just because I don't have that super well-rounded toolkit that other people are just innately have. And having been an MIT grad, I mean, I went to people that designed, went to school, people that designed the MacBook, right? That designed these computers, that went on to create the software, that went on to work for Google. I mean, those were my peers. So I get them. And this, the capacity to use your imagination and your thinking to create the results you want versus to create the results that you don't want is a learned skill. It's one of the most demanding things to learn. If you want a challenge, if you are someone who likes a challenge, master your thinking.
Yeah. Right.
That is one of the hardest things to do. But so it can be learned, but you need a process. For that audience, there's a process and a technique. And there's learning to tune back into innate skills that you're born with, that you're made with by virtue of being human, but that you may not have developed as much as others. So, you know, just like lifting weights, you might start out with a 2 pound weight before you can do a 30 pound weight and do your bicep curls, right? You might have to build up to it. Same thing here. We're talking about building a skill. Some parts of your life, the highly technical, if you're in software development, the highly technical, the rigorous thinking, the logic, the ability to read code and go in there and understand it and manipulate. I learned to program back in the late 1970s. I haven't done it since. I was a little kid. The ability to do that is a skill you have finely tuned, but you may not have developed your emotional, your EQ, your emotional intelligence, your way of reading people as much. Or you may have so finely tuned into the academic and to the intellectual that the emotional, intuitive side of you just is at 2 pounds, whereas the other part of that you can lift 50 pounds. That's not right and wrong. It's just a matter of development.
Right,
And you
yeah.
may never take the part of you that can lift 2 pounds and get it strong enough to lift 50, the same 50 pounds. I don't care. That's not, it doesn't have to be equal, but that you've got enough skill in various aspects of your what I talk about, like the five mental faculties. So there's your imagination, your capacity to imagine, which actually works perfectly. There's your intuition, which for some of us, we need to turn up the volume on our relationship to it. There's your memory, which also works perfectly, and I teach people how to work from backwards, to use your memory to go backwards. There's your reason, which we think of like reasonable logic, but I'm talking about a different kind of reason here. And then there's perception, which is the way we look at the world, which is really foundationally based on a lot of our wallpaper beliefs, the beliefs that are so common that we take them for granted. Oh, you have to work hard to make money. Well, there are people who don't, right? I mean, that, you know, that we, those beliefs that we take for granted that actually create the ceiling on the success. And so turning the volume up on each of those various buckets so that you have a broader capacity of tools to work from to accomplish. So back to the software developer, if they have underdeveloped intuition, then it's a process of starting to learn how do ideas already come to you? Because they already come to them. But it's, do they come to you because you get a knowing? Do you get words? Do you see pictures? Do you just have a feeling? How do these ideas come to you? And then to start to pay attention to just the first, the act of just noticing, oh, I just know. Okay, cool. That's how your intuition speaks to you. Are there any other ways? Oh, I get this sock in the gut feeling. Okay, cool. That's another way your intuition could speak to you. Mine, I see pictures and I hear words. And it's not the kind that would cause me to be in a straitjacket. But I get like ideas that kind of come as sentences, like, oh, that, like the light bulb moment. I'm a big student of the late 18th century, early 20th century, late 1800s, early 1900s author Thomas Troward. So he was a judge in Europe, and he writes some of the, I have to read a paragraph 5 times. So it's really deep work
Really?
on the divine creative process, and so how our thoughts create after their kind, and why, and what first causes, and It's not for everybody, but it's right on point for me. And I was reading Troward this morning. It's a daily thing. And he's talking about how these very same things, the idea that you have inside of you, by virtue of your birth, the capacity to create, because the world was created from thought. You were created in the world. There was one first cause. You are part of first cause. And so your thoughts, so you have dominion over your kingdom, the world you live in, to be equally creative, in his words, as the Almighty. And it's a very powerful concept that
Oh
even after years of study is still landing. But
And
that is there.
that, as you said, you have to read a paragraph 5 times because it's so deep. But you've got the mental capacity to absorb it and finally understand it. But then you also have the capacity, the ability to be able to dissect that and teach that those principles to other people. Whereas if I read it, I'd read it 10 times and it'd be go right over my head. My wife could probably figure it out because she just has a deeper thing than me. You know, I'm too superficial or whatever. I don't know. But nevertheless, you've got the capability of taking a person and getting into those deeper things. I like the conversation here about the like the computer person, but folks, this also applies to the would-be business person, also, who wakes up one morning and says, you know, I have an idea for this particular business. And it starts with a thought, it starts with a thought, starts with an idea. And Tara is taking you through the process and these 5 different things that are involved in that, in seeing that to fruition, to become something. And whether you're an extrovert or you're an introvert, you can do it. You can develop the skills that are required in order to achieve that idea that you woke up with 2 years ago. Am I right, Tara? Am I hitting it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. And here's the where people get hung up. So if you have this idea, you have an idea for a business, and let's just say that it's something that you've never done it. You've never been a business owner, or you've never been an owner in this line of business. A lot of people go, "Oh, I can't do it because I don't know how." But you're not supposed to know how to be running that business 2 years from now today. You're supposed to today know how to take the very next step
To get started.
to get started. And this is what trips people up. They keep thinking, "But I don't know how to do that." The how unfolds along the way. When you're clear on where you're going, the how will unfold, but you got to do today's step. And today's step with the end in mind. That's where the micro visioning tool, when it gets the most powerful, is when you know where you want to be 3 years from now. And this meeting is in service of where you want to be. So if 3 years from now you're fully independent, you're working in your own business, then this next conversation, be it your boss, a prospective client, a prospective business partner, a banker, a creditor, going for an SBA loan, I don't care what it is. This next conversation is done with the end in mind, the 3 year end in mind. This is what it looks like while I'm building this highly successful business. And you put on the feeling tone of the man or the woman who's running this highly successful business, knowing that this meeting is generating that outcome. This is where it gets very subtle.
It's a
Right.
step towards that outcome.
It is a step towards that. Absolutely. The energetics of it is what collapses time. And that's what I work with people on, is how do you get really clear, like so clear that you can live, you can see, hear, smell, touch, taste the experience, so that when you're there, it's like deja vu. And then how can you hold your thinking and your feeling combined with expectation so that it builds around you? And time starts to collapse. This doesn't mean you're not going to do things. I promise you're going to be uncomfortable. I promise you're feared out and worry are going to show up. I promise you all that is going to happen. But taking today's step in the presence of all that will lead you to the outcome.
Right.
You want someone who can help you get there.
That's right. That's where I come
Yep.
in the business world, in the sales world, because I come from the selling sales training background, the coaching background, and I'm a student of Grant Cardone. He's teaching me all that I need to know to do what I do. And one of the things he says is that you come up with an idea, you come up with a product. Well, get going with it. Don't worry about down the road necessarily. Just get started doing something towards the end that you desire, and the way will be established as you get moving. If we never get moving, nothing is ever going to happen, right?
Right.
We've got to start where we're at with the vision in mind, and go from there and just pursue it. And Tara, what you said, we need help. We need a coach, we need a counselor, we need somebody to bounce ideas off with, somebody that we can strategize with, and so on. Obviously, that's where Russ Thomas and RST Coaching Academy comes in. But this thing about the idea and then the planning and the future good outcome, not the fearful outcome. We've got to
Right.
figure out how to shun those things and envision a good outcome. And there's a verse in the Bible that says, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. And so, if we see ourselves as successful and happy and productive and blah, all this positive stuff, that's what we're gonna live out. That's what we're gonna experience. On the other side, if we see ourselves as not worth anything, like your daughter, why would this guy talk to me? If that's our attitude, then we ought not to be surprised if that's how things turn out. So,
And there's a
wow.
reason for that, right? And I completely agree with you, as a man thinketh. And there's another way of talking about that, which is I was trained in the results formula, which is your thoughts create your thinking. I mean, thoughts create your feeling. Your feeling cause your actions, and your actions cause your results.
Yeah.
And so when I speak in front of groups, I do this exercise commonly. So imagine, play with me for a minute, if you would. Imagine that I'm handing you an imaginary plate, and on that imaginary plate is a lemon and a knife. And so if you would be willing to receive, you and anyone who's listening, because you can do this in your imagination or you can do this with your hands, take the plate with the lemon and the knife on it and set it on the table in front of you, and then hold the lemon and take the knife and just cut the lemon in half. This is an imaginary lemon, right? And take the imaginary lemon and smell it, and then take a bite. I don't know about you, but every time I do this exercise, I get my salivary glands. Like I get all, taken in as if I'm eating a lemon.
Yeah.
And did you have that experience?
No, my wife
Okay.
would.
Your
My
wife would.
wife would.
Okay.
But she's a picture thinker like
Sure.
that. She would see you handing that to her. I don't work that way, I guess.
That's okay.
And so yeah, it's a kind of a different world, and it's just the way I am and the way she is,
There's no right or wrong
unfortunately.
here, but
Yeah.
if for those of you that did try it, for most of you, because I've seen this in audiences, you like your face starts to pucker, but there's no real lemon, right?
Right.
It's
It's
all
just all,
imagination.
yeah.
And our subconscious mind is like that. It's so literal. I learned this from the late Bob Proctor. Our subconscious mind is so literal that when we put ideas into it, it takes them as truth. Troward, who was a judge, he says our conscious mind uses the kind of reach de there's a deductive re deductive reasoning where we look at logic and we can go, well, this is good and this is bad, and so I'm going to choose the good and I'm not going to choose the bad. Our subconscious mind uses inductive reasoning. It doesn't have the capacity to choose good or bad. It
Doesn't
just
know
takes
the
everything
difference.
as truth.
Yeah,
Everything
right.
is truth. So whatever you put in is true. So if you put in thoughts, this is the worst thing that ever happened to me, okay, subconscious mind will then go create your results as if that was the worst thing that ever happened to you. Even if it turned out to be good, if it says, this is terrifying, okay, we're going to create terrifying results. This is magical. Okay, it's going to create magical results. Your subconscious mind will go to work immediately on it, and it doesn't have a choice. It just does that. Kind of like the soil outside. If you can plant an apple seed or a weed seed in the soil, if you give it sunlight and water, it doesn't care. It'll grow the apple tree or the weeds.
Yeah. All right.
Your subconscious
Wow.
mind's the same way.
Yeah, this is really interesting stuff. I bet I bet you could keep going, but we got to stop.
All
Yeah, we
good.
got to bring
Yeah.
this to
Well,
a stop. And
thank you.
I think you have put forth some really great principles and ideas for all of us to chew on, to think about, and to implement in our lives. Just in a minute, a sentence or two, anything, any advice, if you could just leave the people with one or two things, what would they be?
Pay attention to your own thinking. And when you're thinking thoughts you don't want to create, change them. So if you're thinking something and you notice you're stuck in fear, ask yourself this question: what would I love the outcome to be?
Yeah.
And then just look at that and go forward.
Boy, that's worth a million right there. Because fortunately, right now we live in a very negative world, and it seems like that is the natural default way people go is to the negative side. It's the negative news that sells, on the media and so on and so forth. But we do have power and control, thankfully, over what goes on in here. And that's a very good point. And you are a coach in this world. Someone would like to get a hold of you. Someone would like to learn more from you. How can people reach you, Tara?
Couple things. I have a gift, so I'd just like to offer a gift to your audience. I have created just a little mini course on that micro visioning process so that they can download that and they can have an audio recording. So that can be picked up at tarabrown.academy.
Tara Brown
Tarabrown.academy. And then you
Academy. Academy is after the period
after the period. Yep, that's the
instead of a com.
yep.
Academy.
Yep.
Cool.
So you can
Tara
get
Brown.
that there and it's a freebie.
Yeah, cool.
And then you can either reach me on Instagram at Tara Brown Professional or my email, Tara Brown at TaraLBrown.com.
Tara, did you say Tara L. Brown? Okay.
Dot com. TaraBrown.com was taken, so you know.
Yep. Good deal. Okay. Would you repeat those again for the audience?
Sure. The micro visioning mini course, TaraBrown.academy. Instagram at Tara Brown Professional. And my email, Tara Brown at Tara LBrown.com.
Got it. Okay. Well, Tara L. Brown, this has been quite enlightening. And we all probably have some work to do on ourselves, on our minds, on our imaginations, on our ideas, and planning how we want to see things come out. And I enjoy it as a salesperson. I enjoyed the part you mentioned of not necessarily going for the throat the first time you meet a prospect, but obviously building a relationship. And that's part of the six-step sales process that we teach is that relationship building. And it depends on the product and the situation that can be done quickly, or maybe it's going to take time. Maybe the more expensive the product, the longer the sales cycle goes, So we've got to be sensitive to that as salespeople and not rush for delivery too soon, or pull the thing as it comes out of the ground and we're going to kill it instead of letting it grow up properly. How's that for an analogy? Pretty
I
cool,
like it. I like it.
huh? Anyway, you
What are
can use
your
that.
six steps?
Well, number one is greet. Number two is qualify. Number three is present the product. Going through after the qualification, you know what the hot buttons are, and you lead the client, the prospect to the proper item, and then that's the presenting the product. And then we're going to propose the purchase basically, and that should be in written form so the customer, the prospect has everything written down before him, because people tend to believe more what they see than what they hear, and so to write things down. Number five is the close, and that's the worst part for most people that would call themselves salespeople, because they don't know how to close. Most people don't even try to close. They just, well, here's the product, this is the information, this is what it costs, and then they hope that the customer will say, I want it. Well, that's not always the case. And so a sales rep needs to learn how to close, how to have negotiation skills, basically. And I think part of that goes back to envisioning a positive outcome and how things are going to go. And I know Grant has said that he'd gotten so good at this, he could literally predict the outcome of a transaction, of a selling situation, just because he knew when he was selling cars how the client was typically going to react. And so he had something to say, and so on and so forth. Then number six is the follow-up. Follow-up when you don't close the sale, because it can often take eight follow-ups or more in order to actually close the sale. And then if you have made the sale, you want to follow up to make sure the client is satisfied, that they don't have any problems. If they have problems, deal with those problems to help keep that client satisfied, asking for referrals, and then looking towards the next sale too, and continue on with the relationship. So that's all part of follow-up. So those are the six steps.
So I have a question for you.
You
First of
bet.
all, it sounds like Grant has highly tuned intuition, y'all. If he can feel that about that's intuition, that a
Yeah.
capacity to be able to read a prospect and understand which way to take it. But for you, I've been taught a lot that people buy on emotion and not on just facts and figures. What's your thought on that?
Well, Grant, I'm a student of the Bible. So if I'm talking religion, I'm talking what God said, what Jesus said, what the Bible says. In this thing, I'm a student of Grant Cardone. And so I'll go back to what he says, and that the initial part, the greeting, the qualification, the presentation, even into the proposal, that's emotional. But logic is where you get into the close. You use logic into the close. It's, you've got the features and the benefits of the product, and then the logic says, you really need to have this product. Yeah, it's expensive. It's probably a lot more than you expected to pay, but this is what's going to meet your need. Put some logic into that too. And salespeople can get screwed up over this emotional thing. If the prospect is going off the wall and getting all hot and bothered and stuff, the salesperson needs to maintain their calm. Otherwise, it really becomes a disaster, because two people that are wound up and all, tense, it's not gonna have a good outcome. So there is the both, the emotion and the logic, and the logic. As far as features and benefits are concerned, features appeal to the intellect, to the analytical thing. The benefit side is going to appeal more to the emotional side, is what it's going to do. So this computer screen has a 5,000 by 2,000 resolution. Well, isn't that nice? A geeky guy, analytical, is going to think, hey, that's really cool. But what does that mean to a normal person, basically? And that's where the emotion comes in, is this is the benefit of that particular analytical feature. So does that answer your question? I hope so.
Absolutely. Thank
That's
you.
it. Grant started this study when he was 25 years old. He just got out of rehab and was selling cars at the time, and he hated what he was doing. And he said, I've got to get good at this. If I'm going to do it, I'm going to excel at it. And so he poured thousands of dollars and thousands of hours into excelling that. And that was his first platform, was teaching sales training to car dealerships. And so he developed a whole courseware around that arena. And then since then, he's branched into just general selling principles and training and stuff, because principles are principles, of course, and they follow. They're not necessarily tied to one industry. So it's been a pretty cool thing. And then the coaching is just taking the training and helping the individual put it to use, and the counseling part of it, I guess you can say, and the strategizing and that. So it's pretty exciting. I'm 75 years old, and I've had a number of businesses in the last 50 years. Most of them have not done a whole lot because I didn't have anybody to help me. And so I'm thinking, time I've got left, I want to help people get the stuff that I didn't have access to. It might have been there when I was doing these businesses years ago, but I wasn't paying attention. And so I suffered for that. I hope other people will be wise enough to realize they need help, just like your clients wise enough to realize they need your help.
Yep. I don't presume to be a business coach. I'm a mindset coach. I can help them excel with their mindset, and then those who are going to launch really high-end businesses need someone like you to help them on the tactics on the business side.
Well, let's go for it.
I love it.
So we've got your tips here, the capacity to use your imagination to design the outcomes that you want, folks. It's here. You've been given that capability, and so use it to its fullest. It's actually, as many of you know, Grant says that success is your duty, obligation, and responsibility. You owe it to yourself, you owe it to your family, you owe it to your church, you owe it to your community, you owe it to your country. And so get out there and be successful. And we're here to help you in any way that we can. Tara gave you her information, mine, obviously, rstcoachingacademy.com. Phone number 386-286-2450. And I think with that, we'll probably bring this to a close. I always try to shoot for about 30 minutes, but all of the guests that I've had, it's so hard to cut off because they're so interesting. There's so much information. And I know you, for one, Tara, could keep going probably for the rest of the day. And it's good because you're so passionate into that. Your little geek has just blossomed into a talker and an educator in this whole world, in this whole realm. So that's really cool. So anyway, folks, until next time when we're connected here online again with Money Talks, this is Russ and Tara signing off and saying au revoir. Take care and over and out. All right. Bye-bye. Hi, thanks for being here today for another episode of Money Talks. I hope it was informative and encouraging to you. If it struck a chord in your heart, or if you have any questions or comments, please let us know. Visit us at rstcoachingacademy.com, call 386-286-2450, or send an email to email@rstcoachingacademy.com. Thanks again, and until next time, be great.